From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM later tonight. Those open lines, I hope your Labor Day weekend is off to a great start. We're going to have live shows for you Saturday, Sunday, Monday night, of course, and then back into our regular programs on Tuesday. But live Labor Day weekend programs for you. So sit back and enjoy. Here's what's happening. Russian President Vladimir Putin has cautioned us, the United States, not to apply too much pressure on North Korea regarding its nuke weapons program, saying that the strained relationship between the two countries was on the verge of a large-scale conflict. Putin posted the warning on the Kremlin's website before he left for the BRICS Nation Summit in China. Putin called on the two nations to open up dialogue with one another. Well, we shall see. Powerful Hurricane Irma now is expected to strengthen over the eastern Atlantic Ocean during the weekend, potentially becoming as potent as a Category 5 storm as it whirls its way towards a possible landfall. It just never seems to stop, does it? Chemical hazards and floods and disasters. We saw what happened just in Houston. It's dangerous. It can pose a health hazard to the general public. Here's the expert, Dr. Gary Ridenour. Gary, this is a serious situation, isn't it?
George, good evening. This is an Old Testament flood, and it will redraw the face of Texas and cause health problems for decades. Your hospitals, your drug stores, your food supplies, and your water systems are gone. There's 1,500 miles of flooded areas in Texas. And, George, we're looking at cholera, our favorite mosquito-borne viral diseases, maybe malaria and polio, and, of course, there'll be mold everywhere. A good example is gasoline, 500 toxic chemicals, which will soak into your drywalls and your carpets, your chairs and clothes and anything else. So anything in contact with this water will be junk. Because of just talking about the gasoline in the water, health problems will be leukemias, lung problems, cancer, heart problems, miscarriages, fetal damage, mental health problems, and suicides.
Well, what do we do about this stuff, doctor? What do we do?
Well, one of the things that happened in Texas was is because of overpumping of water out of the aquifer, large parts of Houston dropped 3 feet. And so that allowed the water to rush in. A lot of people are blaming global warming, but there are some new scientific papers out there saying that what's going on in our environment just by what the world is doing to our environment is causing these fantastic weather changes.
Dr. Ridenour's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com's Twitter feed, but it is pandemicdirect.com. A California man has lost some of his vision after looking at last week's solar eclipse with glasses that were said to be bogus. Remember, that was a problem that I had when Amazon sent me an email because I picked up some glasses on Amazon.com and they said, wait a minute, don't use them. We haven't gotten certification from the company yet. Well, a doctor, an ophthalmologist at the Midwest Eye Institute in Indianapolis who tracked eclipse cases, told the Indiana Star, the newspaper, that the man suffered significant vision loss after watching the eclipse while wearing glasses that were mislabeled as appropriate eyewear. Jeez, that's criminal. They should go after that company. The U.S. economy created 156,000 jobs in August, while the unemployment rate edged higher, though, to 4.4%, according to government reports. Economists are saying, well, we don't know what's going on here, but Mish Michael Shedlock does. Mish, what's going on?
Well, it's sort of a muddle through here, George. I'm surprised it's lasted as long as it has. Every time there's a bad report, there seems to be one that's a little bit better to balance it out. Jobs are stair-stepping down, though. They were higher a year ago, and then a year before that, they were higher than that. And going back 3 years, they were even higher. We're stair-stepping down, but on average, it's still a reasonably good environment. We did have a construction report out today, though, that was the economists were surprised by, not really me, but commercial construction spending was way down. They predicted it to go up. Now, these construction spending reports are volatile, But this is where the job growth has been coming from. All the Walmart building, all the McDonald's building, all the commercial real estate building. So if this is indeed the downturn commercial construction, jobs are going to follow. And back on the hurricane for a second, there were about 500,000 cars that were damaged by this hurricane.
Insurance nightmare.
Insurance nightmare. Warren Buffett came out today and said of those 500,000, 50,000 were a total loss.
Jeez.
His Geico company insures 10% of that area. So, they're going to get a hit. But the big problem here, George, even those that had insurance probably had insurance from wind damage, not from water damage. Mm-hmm. And it's the water damage that's going to get everybody.
All right, Mish, thanks so much. Mish Shedlock, he's our registered investment advisor. South Florida teachers in one of the nation's largest public school districts claim that moldy classrooms and hallways are making them sick, with the Broward Teachers Union claiming complaints to district administrators are going largely unanswered. More than 700 school employees claim to have suffered sinus issues, watery eyes, headaches, itching, rashes, asthma as a result of the mold. All right, you may well be yawning just listening to this. It seems to be contagious. Now researchers have looked at what happens in our brains to trigger that very special response. According to a University of Nottingham team, it found that it occurs in part of the brain responsible for motor function. The primary motor cortex also plays a part in conditions such as Tourette's syndrome. So the scientists say understanding the contagious yawning could also help understand those other disorders too. Contagious yawning is a common form of an automatic imitation of someone else's words or actions. How about that? A homeless man killed a pigeon in front of horrified onlookers in New York because he said he's a vampire and needed the blood to live. Not to be too gory here, but he ripped the head off the pigeon and then started slurping down the dead bird's blood. People just went ballistic. An international team of astronomers used the Hubble Space Telescope to estimate whether there might be water on the 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting a nearby dwarf star. The results? The outer planets of the system might still harbor substantial amounts of water. What else is going on out there in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Yeah, lots going on, and a happy Labor Day weekend to you and the
crew. You too, Peter.
George.
Thank you.
This is yet another weekend when the National UFO Reporting Center webmaster is off gallivanting in rural Utah this weekend, so the Coast listeners are just going to have to take me at my word when I summarize some of these very interesting...
We always take you at your word, Peter.
I hope so. I hope my reputation stands up to that, George. I have 4 quick reports that I'd like to present, and then just if time remains, I'd like to make a comment about some of the prank calls the hotline is getting here over the last several days. First report comes from Austin, the year 1960, August of 1960. You know my weakness for reports from the 40s, 50s, and 1960s, George, and also for stories about red, orange, and yellow fireballs or orbs, call them what you wish. This one encompasses both of those subjects. Just yesterday, I received an excellently prepared report from a gentleman who describes himself as a professor emeritus. I'm inclined to believe it based on how nicely he's written the prose of his report. But he says he was a kid of 8 years of age back in 1960. His whole family was out in the backyard waiting for the Echo 1 satellite to fly over. You probably remember it.
I remember that one.
And while they were waiting, it was scheduled to come over in about 3 or 4 minutes, an orange or amber object about the size of a pencil eraser held at arm's length streaked across the sky. He said it went from horizon to horizon in about 4 seconds, shedding no fragments or wasn't generating any blue light, so it probably was not a meteor. Very interesting report. We'll have that posted to our website as soon as our webmaster gets back. Second one is a little more recent. This comes from Tuesday of this week. Gentleman who describes himself as an engineer, possibly a mining engineer, George, was flying from California to the East Coast. They were flying over a well-known copper mine just south of Tucson, Arizona. He looked down and was amazed, apparently, to see a disc-shaped object hovering near the mine. I presume it cast a shadow, had a very good eyeball on it, he said, and had a very good sighting of that object. He said it was very, very bizarre. Third sighting comes from just last night. Magna, Utah, three adult women were out walking around a cemetery. One of them, for some reason, just looked up above them, saw a round, very large object just hovering motionless in the daytime or almost nighttime sky. It was below clouds, below the cloud level, which was very interesting. And another noteworthy point is as the clouds tended to drift in one direction, the object just sat and hovered there until it disappeared quite suddenly, I gather. The fourth and last report comes from Dearborn, Michigan this morning, and people in Dearborn, please perk up your ears because
probably my mother launching a balloon or something.
Well, it wasn't one balloon, George. It was an estimated 50 of them over the course of about 20 minutes.
Wow.
Guy went outside from his place of work. He works in the automobile industry, and he went outside for a break with one of his coworkers, and they saw three white objects moving across the sky. Turns out they were going in a different direction from the prevailing wind, so they were very, very interesting objects. All told, they estimate about 50 of them.
Jeez, that's amazing.
If anybody's in the Dearborn area and saw them, we would like to hear from them. Final note, if we have a moment more.
Go for it.
Has to do with prank calls that I've mentioned on this program in times past. Sometime last Saturday, somebody put an announcement on the internet encouraging young children to call our hotline and just make pests of them.
Oh, jeez, what an idiot.
And I know Coast champions a lot of good causes, George, to your great credit. One of them is I don't think parents or grandparents should be allowing young children, this is 6 to 12 years of age, I estimate, to have cell phones and use them without supervision. It's just been a nightmare for me. And I mention it principally in part to let the Coast listeners know that if they call the hotline with a UFO report, I'm going to have it on answering service and will return their calls if it's a mature-sounding individual who's left the message.
Well, what you also need to do, Peter, is put in a caller ID system and get that phone number. And when you do, you call it back, and hopefully a parent will answer, and you'll tell them what's going on. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, Chase Klotzke back with us on Coast to Coast as we talk about the field manual for investigating UFOs, paranormal activities, strange creatures, and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Chase Klotzke back with us, earned her Master of Trainers, Master of Instructors titles while employed with the Department of Defense. She's schooled and certified as a private investigator, demonstrates the technical requirements needed when performing UFO-based investigations. Chase is the leader of the special assignment team for MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network. She's got a book called Admissible, the Field Manual for Investigating UFOs, Paranormal Activity, and Strange Creatures. And also, of course, has been working on the Star Child investigation that the late Lloyd Pye was so well known for. Chase, welcome back to the program.
George, thanks so much for having me. I always enjoy talking with you.
Are you all set for Labor Day weekend? What are you doing? Anything special?
It's actually my husband and youngest son's birthday, so we always, you know, it's always
cool.
A big, big celebration.
Were they born on the same day or pretty close?
They are, and they have the same name, so it really messes with Social Security.
My son and his little boy Simon were born on the same day as well, so we celebrate the birthday in January, but it's a hoot when that happens, isn't it? It really is. Well, it's good. It's good to see you, and it was good seeing you at our Beyond Belief television taping, too.
What a great time we had, and again, you know, it's always such a privilege to get to work with you, especially, you know, in beautiful Colorado.
Oh, it was delightful, and for folks who want to see that program upcoming, it's on beyondbelief.com, simple as that. You can sign up to watch it. And one of the things we talked about was, of course, the Star Child Project, of course, that Lloyd Pye just spent the rest of his career and life with. God rest his soul. Tell us some of the new things that you've uncovered, Chase, and how did you get involved with the Star Child skull investigation?
I was approached by the owner, Melanie Young, at a conference, and I had just finished one of my talks, basically talking about admissibility and proper evidence and why we need to raise the bar and, you know, really tenaciously go after real science in our investigations. And she liked what I had to say and approached me after the talk. And, you know, through many discussions, we decided that we would go ahead and partner with this and go forward and, you know, do the investigation. However, the biggest challenge was it was Lloyd's work. It's Lloyd's project. And, you know, who didn't love him? So it was very difficult to think about how I could arrange taking over somebody else's investigation. So Carrie McClure, my partner in the field reports, and I, you know, we just decided to treat it as a cold case and start our own, you know, investigation and not rely on Lloyd's work. We didn't want to stand on his shoulders or grab his coattails.
Well, and Chase, for the many new people who are listening to this program who are probably saying, Star Child? What are they talking about? Explain the Star Child.
The Star Child is an anomalous-looking skull that was found many, many, many years ago, decades actually. And, you know, it's just one of these little anomalies where you look at it and it's just so strange, you automatically know something isn't right. And it looks to be what we would consider alien. So
it does. I held a replica of the skull up for Beyond Belief, and it truly is a very elongated skull. It's really weird.
Yes, it's very bulbous, and of course that causes a lot of speculation on why is the head shaped this way? Why do the eyes sockets, you know, look this way? There's many, many characteristics of the skull that are just so shockingly not normal or not correct in human anatomy that, you know, Lloyd agreed to take it on when Melanie had brought it to a MUFON meeting, I believe, you know, down in South Texas, and he was there speaking about Bigfoot, because we know that Lloyd's real truthful love in his life was human origins. And that's why he agreed to take on the investigation himself on the Star Child skull.
And he was convinced that the skull could have been extraterrestrial, right?
Yeah, and when you first see the skull, as we just discussed, the first appearance, your first impression is, oh my gosh, what is that? And then when you start looking at really all the deviations of a normal human skull that are so obvious on the skull, you know, it's easy to go there. But then when you have examination after examination and these things are not only verified but tested, it's easy to follow one chain and follow a trail. But Lloyd was dedicated, from what I hear, he was very dedicated on, you know, finding that scientific community that was going to validate the truthfulness of the skull.
And you conducted some DNA tests, right? You had it done?
We did. We conducted many tests and actually brought the skull to many new types of scientists and, you know, professionals in the field that weren't even available when Lloyd was here. So, yeah, we had a lot more data to work with, but yes, we did have the DNA done.
Let's go through those results, Chase, when we come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM for the next couple hours. Chase Klotzke with us. We'll be talking about her UFO investigations. What's under Malibu in California? Is there some kind of secret base? We'll talk about that, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Tuesday, September 26th in Los Angeles, our special luncheon series begins again with Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. So come on out and join us. We're going to have a lot of fun. Simply send an email with your name and phone number at lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com, and they'll get right back to you and sign you up. lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and of course I'll be there too. And welcome back to Coast, Chase Klotzke with us. We're talking about a number of things, including the Starchild skull investigation. So you did DNA results. How long did it take to get the results done, Chase, from when you started to when it was completed?
We waited probably about a year before we even sent the DNA in, because we wanted a more probative sample to go into the DNA. We knew we only had one shot left, and we had to do it right. And we were sending this to Canada because we needed a paleo lab, and not just any DNA lab. This certainly wasn't a 23andMe type situation with the Starchild skull carbon dated at 900 years old. So it took a while. We waited for the best lab available, and we did wait quite some time to get this done.
Was it expensive?
It is. It certainly wasn't as expensive as when Lloyd was having testing done. It's definitely more affordable at a consumer level, but you know, when you're not funded and this comes out of your pocket, it's expensive.
And the results were?
Well, the results correlated absolutely with the three tests that Lloyd had had performed before his passing, and that is haplogroup C1 for the female, and that is Native American, which also...
That was what we thought was the mother that the child was cradled with, right?
Yes, but it turned out that the skull, the female skull that was with the star child, is not related to the star child.
Ah, okay. So maybe a nanny or something like that.
Right, or a caregiver.
A caregiver.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
Okay, and go ahead with the rest.
Well, we definitely were able, or the lab was able to secure the nuclear DNA, and we were excited about this, especially Melanie, because this was something that Lloyd really needed, and we just couldn't get that kind of sample secured and collected, but this time the lab had it. And the nuclear DNA comes from the father. So the mother has the mitochondrial, which was, again, haplogroup C1. And we were sitting on pins and needles to find out what the father was, and it turns out he's haplogroup Q, which is...
Which means what?
It's South American. So... yeah, completely human.
So we've got Native American?
Yes.
South American?
Mm-hmm.
And the skull of the star child is a mixture of each?
Yes, absolutely.
No extraterrestrial DNA or unknown DNA there?
No, none at all. In fact, the phenotypical test results were also completely human. You know, but... When we were involved in the metals, I've done a lot of cases, UFO cases that involved metal type evidence, and we would send that in and have the stuff analyzed. You know, George, we're not finding all these, you know, really weird, exotic, we've never heard of elements in some of these alloys.
Hmm.
And then you realize that this universe is kind of made up of all the same material.
Well, there comes then my theory. And my theory is, Chase, what if the star child is extraterrestrial just because of its elongated skull and its alien-looking head, but it's human? And by that, I mean human throughout the universe.
This is absolutely, as fringe as it sounds, it is absolutely something we have to keep open and keep considering, because we have Sumerian tablets, and I know you're well-versed in kind of the biblical or supernatural
yes.
narrative What if we did come? We were intelligently designed by the Anunnaki or the Samaritans, you know, tablets tell a big story. So if we were made in their image and they were extraterrestrial, how far would our DNA be apart?
Exactly, because the DNA doesn't tell you where it's from. It basically just tells you what you are. And it's entirely possible that the DNA that is in the Star Child could be DNA that is throughout the universe. I mean, my DNA could be throughout the universe, yours, everybody else's.
It is a theory. It's something that we have to keep open and keep considering. However, science doesn't care what we believe, right, George?
And that's right.
Right now, it's human. And, you know, until we can have that extraterrestrial or even the hybrids DNA that we can start banking into the data, then we can start pulling out that phenotypical deviation from human.
We're with Chase Klotsky. Now we're going to talk about UFO work and the UFO confirmation through science. Tell us, because you're an expert in investigations, tell us how you would get going into a UFO case.
You know, it's my favorite. It's my forte. I love when we get these UFO reports. And to be honest, I've kind of turned into a snob.
No, not you. You'll never be a snob.
I honestly have, George, because we have so many reports of lights in the sky. I've gotten to the point where I don't even want to take those anymore. The data is important in our banks, as you know, Peter Davenport explained earlier. We're still trying to figure out these lights, but my forte is physical evidence. So when we get these reports, the first thing you want to do is, you know, vet the credibility of the witness that's giving you this information.
True. Okay, so what's going on in the world of UFOs these days?
It's all over the place. This is a story that's not going away. As we heard, again, from Peter Davenport earlier, you know, really very credible people see things that are not supposed to exist every single day. I know that Peter takes a lot of UFO reports in the National UFO Reporting Center, but we also have MUFON, averages right now about 500 to maybe 900 reports a month. And UFO reports are kind of slightly coming down a bit. We notice that when there's kind of the hot TV show about UFOs or the X-Files is on TV, people realize that, you know, they come forward. And we get a lot more reports. And when these shows are not really popular at the moment, or a lot of them on the air, you know, the reports come down just a bit. But when you think of 500 reports, even at the lowest, a month, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And they come from all over the world. These reports are not, they're not selective. You know, they're not looking for one type of race or religion or country. It's a world phenomena.
We don't seem to be getting the kind of reports we used to get in the 50s and 60s. In that era, we got incredible stories of landings, extraterrestrial scene, you know, scurrying around the craft. I mean, Lonnie Zamora, the police officer from Socorro, New Mexico, the late police officer,
yes,
saw a pod out there in the desert with a couple extraterrestrials out there. They saw him. They jumped in the craft. They took off. We don't seem to get those anymore. Instead, we get what you just said, lights in the sky or something that zooms by. But where are the cases of it landed? We saw them walking. They were out there. They, you know, went up to a house. We don't get those anymore.
You know, on the surface, that's absolutely the impression, and mostly true. But I'll tell you, George, the thing that I've noticed as we dig into some of these cases, especially in MUFON with the special assignment team, this people are forgetting what evidence is. What does this mean? And to be perfectly honest, it takes a lot of money to get in your car and go out, it's kind of gone are the day are the gumshoes. We have so many investigators that want to rely on the internet, and I think it's a mistake. I think we need to get in our car, you know, do the work, get to the historical.
Oh, you got to get samples and stuff. I mean, remember the old days? I go back to that again, where you had tripod landing marks, or you had scorches on the earth, you know, burned out areas. Where are those anymore?
We still get them. We still get these reports. The other thing is the topic of UFOs is so polluted. They're all over the place, and it's really difficult to find the cases that are legit and are working, even in modernity. It's very difficult to filter through this. It's why, you know, shows like yours is important, and, you know, some of the, you know, more vocal websites and programs like Citizens Hearing for Disclosure. They offer the type of evidences and places to go to. The MUFON Symposium, you know, you've got a big database that you can just Google MUFON.com and look up everything you need, or, you know, Peter's reporting, a National UFO Reporting Center. So it's really difficult when you're brand new to figure out where is the legit information, because it's so polluted, and polluted meaning, you know, globally. So the internet in some ways has done us a lot of favors. We have a lot more information faster, but it's also hurt our efforts out here quite a bit.
I had a friend of mine who was a reporter in St. Louis, Ron Barber, and Ron was assigned a case to go to Ellsbury, Missouri, where there were UFO cases all over the place. And this is years ago, back in the 70s. And when he got on the scene, he saw one dead cow in the middle of a circle with other cows going around the circle, around the cow. They would not go in the circle. They'd go around it. And then he said the startling thing he saw was scorched on the side of a tree, thousands of dead flies. They were just burned right into the bark of a scorched tree. Now, what the heck would cause that?
Keep in
mind, there were UFO reports all over the place.
Right. That would be the first thing that goes through my head, although I wouldn't tell the witnesses at the time because we don't want to lead our witnesses in interview. I would think cattle mutilation. Obviously, that something shocking has happened. And we do know through the work of those that have put the boots on the ground and studied this that the other cows won't go near them and they stay far away. And there are clear indications of the type of mutilations, but laser and surgical type of incisions. And, you know, the vets today don't have any idea how that incision was so clean and the blood is gone and certain body parts, tongues, eyes, the udder, internal organs, things like this. You know, these many, many things like this, these were stories, but they also seemed to group, and it's like you have 10 years of this. And then we had our flaps, Phoenix, Stevensville.
Yeah.
And so there is a part of exactly what you said earlier, George, about it is a little more quiet with the big types of cases. I don't know if it's the calm before the storm.
What about disclosure? Are we ever going to get it?
I do believe so, but I'm a ufologist and a UFO investigator, so that's probably, you know, something that's ingrained in all of us that, you know, we're out here working, we're out here pushing the information forward, and we want it so badly. And I don't believe it's going to come from our politicians. I think it's going to come from science. I think we're going to, you know, find that signal and, you know, eventually they'll tell us they found something, but I believe it's going to be confirmation over disclosure. You know, I don't know, George, without any politics at all in this, would you believe the president anyway if they came out? I mean, imagine the storm.
I'd want to know if they came out and told us about this, I'd want to know why they had been suppressing it so many years. You know, let's say back to the 1947 era of Roswell.
Right.
You know, why suppress it? Why not simply come right out and tell us? And why do you think that's the case? Assuming these are real, why not just tell us?
I believe back in that time frame, you know, we have to understand the late 40s and early 50s, and, you know, people, if the government asked you to keep quiet, you did. It was just a different time and place, and I believe that the cover-up had a lot to do with technology, weapons, very smart people, so to speak, and the government realized right away if we had access to that kind of technology, especially if no one else had it, it's all control and money. It's definitely control and money. And then, of course, I don't even believe the presidents are told about any of this information. They don't have a need to know. They're temporary employees. Why would you tell the president? They write books in 8 years, right?
So, yeah, and they make big bucks in 8 years.
Yes. And I really do believe that there is this little breakaway society or this little breakaway group that controls the secrecy and this cover-up, and they've condensed it and compartmentalized so brilliantly that it's almost funny to think that they could keep a secret that big. And for anyone out there that thinks that the government can't keep a secret, I have a challenge. We have many, many documents that are blacked out. And I'd love for them to tell me what's under all that black mark.
That's right. Why? What kind of security measures force them to black everything out?
Yes. And if they can tell me what's under all our redactions and all those black marks, then I'll believe the government can't keep a secret. So, you know, that's kind of my challenge out there right now.
Actor Rob Lowe got involved in the Malibu underwater base. Tell us about that.
It was kind of comical at first, you know, Rob Lowe, what's his interest in, you know, we heard that he, growing up, like all of us, you know, listening to Coast to Coast and watching some of these shows, he really was fascinated. One of his favorite shows on TV right now is Age of Aliens, mm-hmm. and he just loves this whole topic. And raising his boys, he also told a lot of the stories, and, you know, it was like a fun thing or just something that he shared with his kids. And now that they're older and going off to college and he knows that, you know, they're getting ready to enter older adult life on their own, he wanted a special time with them. And he kind of came up with this idea that they were going to take their own adventures and look for themselves. And he wanted to look for UFOs, and he wanted to talk about Bigfoot and just the whole genre. And so that's what he did. And he contacted.
And he did it in a big way, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did, because only someone like Rob Lowe could get the kind of money it took to pull off this investigation.
Well, what do you think is down there in Malibu in the ocean? What is
it? Well, honestly, we did discover conclusive proof about what it is, and it is a natural knoll.
God, it looks like an underground base, doesn't it?
It sure does, absolutely. And this was the big mystery. But then when you learn, when you really dig in, and, you know, I did a lot of interviewing and a lot of study about satellite imaging, and you realize that that's not a photograph. It's pieced together with data.
Uh-huh. Right.
That they get, and then Google imaging, when they put it in the 3D
it's like replicator. It's like sonar and makes a picture.
Yes. And so the picture looks very uniformed, and that's exactly what it is. It doesn't look anything like that under the water.
Are you, you're not a skeptic, you're not a debunker, but some people would think you would be. How come?
Because it probably in the last couple of years, the Star Child's human, the Malibu base is actually
a natural formation. Yeah.
And honestly, George, I'm out here, and I have been since 1994, seriously looking for the truth and seriously looking for the evidence.
Wherever it takes you.
Absolutely. But we have to tell the truth. We absolutely have to tell the truth. And we have to do the due diligence that, you know, our evidence, when we come out and make these statements, the underwater base is a thrust fault. Where's the data? Where's the science? And how do we make this admissible? We meet that burden of proof. And, you know, we're telling the truth. I mean, it's
Chase, when we come back, let's talk about your book, Admissible, and also we'll take phone calls next hour on Coast to Coast AM.